Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Thursday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. What terrible news yesterday. That flight going into D.C., the helicopter clipping it, awful. That was terrible. I just wanted to mention that off the bat there, just how awful that was, and certainly
so many questions too, right? I mean, you've had so many different experts, former Black Hawk helicopter and other pilots saying it's so difficult to see, and the Black Hawks are normally flying at like 400 feet, and I guess this one was flying like lights out. For the most part, it's crazy, man, and it's so sad. Now you're finding out that there were national figure skating competitors and their coaches and parents on that plane, and yeah, not a good scene.
Yeah, that was very, very sad. Then I'm reading the news going to the airport, like that. Ooh. Not necessarily the news. Not that I'm like, you know, whatever. Like I'm safe, all that. But that was very, very sad, tragic to see that. I've been thinking about it a lot, quite frankly. It's bothered me a little bit. Good win for the Cougars last night, Blankers.
I was going to ask you about that.
What did you want to ask?
Well, I mean, first of all, I couldn't find it. I was trying to find if it was televised anywhere, but I was just curious.
You can listen on the Houston Sports Network.
Yeah, well, sometimes I got a lot of stuff going on with half the household being sick. But I was curious, like, Sharp, is he okay? Because I know that they were kind of limiting his minutes. He still played seemingly fairly well, but I had seen Fran Fraschilla report that maybe they were going to sit him for a week or so, and I don't know, can they afford to do that?
I mean, depends on what you mean by afford. Like, what do you put the value in?
I mean, schedule-wise.
Yeah, I mean, they have a tough one on Saturday. Texas Tech's really good. They're playing really well. Five wins in a row, nationally ranked. Top 15 net ranking, top 15 KenPom. Saturday's game's going to be electric. That's going to be fun. Cannot wait. Samson mentioned after the game that he probably shouldn't have played him. But, I mean, he's fighting through it. You know, foot sprain. Can do more damage. It's more like pain tolerance and stuff like that. So I'm curious. Like, I think it's on the table after what he said. You know, they'll make that decision, I'm sure, Saturday. Because, I mean, he gets better, and then it's like, hey, and then all of a sudden he, like, hits it again. And it's like, oh, that's not good. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there. Deep, like, you know, Terrence Arsenault would be the starter. Because Sharp has missed the one game. He missed the game against Utah. Arsenault filled in, played well. Like, so they do have the depth, maybe, to sustain it. And is it worth it in terms of getting them right? Yeah, I think that it's on the table for them. But anytime you come away with a double-digit road win, and I go, God, they're a little dicey there, but West Virginia's a good team. West Virginia beat Iowa State at home, by the way. Let's not forget that West Virginia has some really good wins. Really good wins. You get a double-digit road win like that in the Big 12, you take it. You take it. So, happy with that.
Yeah, it was a great win. And I think, again, what I always seem to notice about this team, and whether I was able to watch them or not, you know that the defense travels. And I think that the reason why I saw Kelvin say after the game they were able to take the crowd and keep the crowd out of the game. Well, that's because their defense sets the tone. And that's why it's so fun to watch them play because – you know, regardless of if they're making the threes or not, or their shots are falling down or not, that defense is stifling.
Yeah, fun game, fun game. Saturday's going to be a lot of fun, too. If you're looking for something to do, you might have to pay the upcharge for the secondary ticket market, but I would advise you to do that. So this has been on my mind for a couple of days here, quite frankly. Dana Brown was talking to the media earlier this week. I think it was on Monday. It might have been Tuesday, but I think it was on Monday. He was talking about Altuve playing left field, right? And we thought that it was only going to be a Bregman thing. Like, if Bregman comes here, well, then you move Isak to second. Jose Altuve is going to play left field. And then Dana Brown dropped, like, the additional nugget when it comes to that and said, oh, yeah, no, he might play left field no matter if we sign Alex Bregman or not. And my thought on this is there a better teammate than Jose Altuve? Is there been a better Astro than Jose Altuve? Because we've seen Jose Altuve take multiple team-friendly contracts. The first contract that he signed with the Astros was a steal. It was a bargain. He won the MVP on a very low salary. And then the Astros took care of him with a second contract. But then most recently, he takes below market value. That way he can maybe-ish finish his career with the Houston Astros. So this is your greatest player in franchise history that not once but twice took a team-friendly deal. This is the same guy during the COVID year, you might remember, that was struggling so bad, he knocked on Dusty Baker's office and said, hey, Skip, move me down in the lineup. I'm not performing. This guy's going to be a Hall of Famer, and because he wasn't performing, he asked his manager to move him down in the lineup because he's self-aware, and again, he's the ultimate teammate guy. And now we're learning that a dude who's a Hall of Famer, who's the face of the Houston Astros, the greatest Houston Astro ever, that if he really, like, you know, pushed his weight around, could pretty much do whatever he wanted. I think that he could do whatever he wants when it comes to the Houston Astros. And if he knocked on Jim Crane's door and was like, hey, I refuse to play left field, that would probably happen. And we learned that he's willing to play left field. Jose Altuve is the ultimate team guy. He might be the most ultimate team guy we've seen in the history of this city, especially when you add the talent of the player, because he is going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I just don't know how you argue it. I mean, you think about it and go over the course of history, and it goes with guys that eventually started to change positions. Like A-Rod said, he was never going to change positions. And then, of course, when he goes to the Yankees, he finally relents. But I don't think that he would do it for anybody else. He did it because he was joining the Yankees and Derek Jeter. But I think that you look at Correa, who said, you know, he was adamant. He's a shortstop, not a third baseman, because there were talks at times that they were thinking about moving him. But when you look at what Altuve has done, how graciously he's done it, he gives the team-friendly deals. He's outspoken to be loyal to his teammates. There's a reason why Justin Verlander comes out and says, I literally love Jose Altuve, because he really makes it about everybody else but him. He likes to deflect. He likes to give credit to others. He does everything that they ask, and sometimes even if they don't ask, he's willing to do what a lot of guys with his credentials that you mentioned that have an ego would say, no way, no how. I've earned the ability to pick my spots, play where I want to play, and make the money that I think I have to make. And instead, here's a guy that not only is a class act the way he represents the franchise, but the way he goes about his daily helps this team to win baseball games and be successful.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is there anybody even in the conversation that has been an all-time great in the city that has been this type of teammate? Like, Brady took a lot of money. Like, Brady left a lot of money on the table to help the Patriots. That could have been a little bit self-rewarding, though, right? Because it led him to all the Super Bowl titles. Like, Hakeem, like, demanded trades multiple times.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Like, he was somebody who wasn't always happy in Houston. James Harden, certainly not.
I mean, you could throw in Biggio, because he kind of did the same thing, moving to center and then left field because of Jeff Kent and then Beltran.
Biggio would be the closest. Yeah, and maybe almost the identical, right? Like, he almost did the same exact thing.
And he started off at catcher and moved to second, so he moved multiple times in his career.
Now, the move into second, I think, was a little bit self-rewarding as well, because I don't think he gets the 3,000 hits if he catches his whole
Probably
career.
Not.
But, yeah, team, like, he was asked to do it. It wasn't his idea. I remember it was Art Howe. I know it was the manager that went to Biggio. It was like, hey, can you, I think we should move you to second base to save your legs a little bit. So, yeah, Biggio would be in that conversation. Although, Biggio, did he take the salary hit that Altuve did? Because I remember when he was a free agent, like, he was pretty close to leaving to go to Colorado. So I think that the Astros still paid him top dollar, whereas they really have never done that at least they haven't done it with Altuve on his first contract and his third contract. His second contract was fair market value, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. I was going to mention the Hakeem thing. I mean, Hakeem essentially pushed his way out. He and Charlie Thomas were sideways. There was no way he wanted to play with the organization as long as Charlie was the owner. And he spent that year that everybody dreads in Toronto. Otherwise, he would be that type of guy. But you kind of go up and down the list. You can't find many of the current Astros because they all, when their contract's up, seem to just walk out the door. From a Rockets perspective, I really can't think of any because we know Harden wasn't that guy. And we know that, you know, in between, we rotated other superstars and other players. And I don't remember a lot of them. But he didn't play his whole career here. But the one that at least from a financial standpoint, was Barkley taking $1 million so Scottie Pippen could make $11 million so that they could try to make the team as good as they could make it be. But we all know that off the court, I mean, Charles wasn't at Jose Altuve, though a lot of people don't know how generous he was. But I don't think Altuve's throwing guys through glass windows and throwing haymakers.
Now, didn't Barkley also demand that $1 million back, like, post-retirement?
No. So the story behind the story is, because I've had, like, conversations about this with Carol Dawson when he was alive and everything else. But Les supposedly said, and there was a promise on the table, if you take $1 million for 1 year down the road and on one of your next contracts, I'll make it up to you. And then Charles subsequently got hurt, never really was able to play to the levels that they wanted him to, and he ended up walking away from the game. Evidently, he still expected in some way, somehow, he would still get that money. And for a while, he held a grudge. He hated the Rockets because of Carroll and because of Les. And, I mean, I had three or four conversations in the middle with Carol Dawson, and Carol was adamant, like, believe me, this wasn't me, and I want to do right by Charles, but I don't know that there was a promise unless he and Les talk personally, and no one will ever own up to it.
Yeah, I think Biggio's the closest for sure to Altuve. I would put Altuve with a slight lead because of the two team-friendly contracts. The other one that comes to my mind, I wouldn't put him on the same tier, but some might, would be J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, you know, but He did leave Houston whenever the writing was on the wall, when they were not supposed to be very good. Jose Altuve really hasn't had that opportunity, I guess. You know, maybe Altuve does it whenever the end of this contract's up. Maybe he's at 2,982 hits, and the Astros don't want to bring him back because they're rebuilding or something, and he goes to, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates. Like, so maybe that could change with Altuve. I would say that the one negative to Watt in terms of this conversation is, there were times that Watt would freelance a little bit. There was times that J.J. Watt would go out of gap assignment a little bit.
That was reportedly part of the rift between him and O'Brien.
Yeah. So, like, you can make the case that a guy going out of gap assignment could be a little bit of selfish. But you could also say Jose Altuve trying to take a lot of extra bases could also be a little bit thrown out a lot,
yeah.
Yeah. So, I think that maybe Watt could be in this conversation a little bit too, Blankers.
Yeah, I think it's a great call. I think that, you know, I don't think it was organizationally driven, and I don't think it was ownership driven like with Akeem. I think with JJ, it was, I can't take any more of, yes, the losing, but, you know, the regime of Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby. And, you know, even when he tries to take the high road with McAfee and others, he can't help himself but call out the fact that from Jack to the way everything went down, that it really kind of still is stuck in his craw. So I think JJ is as close as he gets to Altuve in terms of on the playing field or court, off the field, the community things that he did. I mean, look, we're never going to forget the tens of millions of dollars that he raised and all the things that he did dedicated to this city. Altuve does a ton of that stuff. They're both squeaky clean image-wise. I think that's it. I think it's JJ.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Is there anybody we're missing when it comes to this? Altuve, the ultimate team-first guy, and for his stature and his caliber, the biggest team-first guy in the city of Houston, in the history of sports history. The history of sports history in the city of Houston. Are you cool with Cali? If Cali is the OC, are you cool with that?
Never, never quit.
Bad Take Boulevard. It is a Thursday, after all. It doesn't necessarily feel like a Thursday. And then we had a listener text in to John and Lance bashing us today for bashing Lance's comment and story on the Bobby Slowick, C.J. Stroud thing, which couldn't be further from the truth. But we'll listen to that conversation as well. And then Joel Blank had a little run-in with the SWAT team. What? We'll get into all of that and much, much more. 713-780-ESPN. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. On Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. Brian at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Did Scott Boras screw Bregman and the Astros? 713-780-3776. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So I had a run-in with an avocado this morning.
What the hell's that mean?
I was trying to cut up an avocado. And
you've done this again?
I've had my second run with an avocado. This is avocado 2, Brand Zero.
Because last time I think you said, quote, I tried to be chefy.
I was in college. I was in college when this happened. So this is okay. This is the first time the avocado's gotten the best of Branham in the last 20 years. I mean, that's a pretty long time, you know. I lost to an avocado in 05, and now I'm losing to one in 25. Like, once every 20 years, no big deal, right?
The scouting report didn't change, though.
Yeah, so...
Did the pit get you?
No. It did. The first time, the pit's what got me. I was trying to, you know, be a chef and take the pit out, like, all, you know, chefy. And it slipped off the pit and punctured the middle of my hand, the palm. And I had to go to the ER.
Okay, Scotty Scheffler, be careful now.
I don't know Scheffler's entire story, but it's very similar to what I read. Anyways,
Scheffler was holding a glass of wine and trying to cut his own pasta, and the glass broke and severed some stuff in his palm.
How did it break?
Surgery.
Like in his hand?
I don't know. I was thinking it was going to be like something related to the knife, but evidently the glass broke, and then that somehow translated to cutting his palm open.
Like, did he squeeze the glass too hard? I mean, a golfer probably does have pretty good grip strength.
Like, don't you use two hands when you're cutting pasta? Who cuts their own pasta?
I'm not sure I've ever cut pasta in my life.
The only way you do it is you put it in, like, the grinder, like the glorified version of Play-Doh, where you just put all the pasta stuff in the thing, and you just turn the handle, and it cranks out the pasta. I don't know who cuts their own pasta.
Maybe if he's making it homemade. I think I've seen that before. Like, people that make it homemade and do their own, like, the flour.
That's
and
what I'm saying, but
links.
You put it in that kind of grinder, and then it grinds out, depending on if you want spaghetti or fettuccine or what size the noodle is, that there's a thing that does that so that you don't have to cut it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's different – I mean, I guess it depends on the noodle, the specific noodle. But anyways, today I had a little bit of a knife, and I was trying to, you know, just cut the avocado open, and it slipped, and it clipped the very top of my index finger, like right in half. Yeah. I don't know if I need stitches or not, but I didn't have time to go, so – we'll have to see how it goes. Anyways, enough about my itty-bitty finger. Did Scott Boras screw Bregman and the Astros, Blinker? 713-780-ESPN. Where do you stand on this?
I think we were kicking some of this stuff around yesterday a little bit, but I'm curious your thoughts because you and I have had the conversation off the air, and I know it comes down to what Bregman eventually signs for. I just think Scott Boras, once again, has done his client a disservice in Alex Bregman. I think that he was trying to use what Dana Brown and the Astros were saying publicly about how Bregman was their top priority, and we obviously really want him back, and all the stuff that we have heard over and over again ad nauseum about what Dana had said when the process of free agency first began. But now that we are at this point in the process, and Bregman doesn't have anything close to what maybe Boras is the only guy putting out there that Bregman has on the table, it seems like the Astros have provided him with the biggest, best offer so far that he has received. And if I'm Alex Bregman, and we've talked about the track record, it starts all the way back with Dallas Keuchel, and it goes through the guise of the recent free agency process when we talk about Chapman, and we talk about Snell, and we talk about Montgomery, and all the different guys. Boras isn't the same guy with the same weight doing the same things, but he's making the same kind of promises that he was able to deliver on previously. And if I'm Alex Bregman, I'm pretty ticked off because – if you believe anything and who you talk to, and I'm sure what Boras was saying, it was going to be a really hot market. It was going to be competitive. You had big name, big money teams involved, and you were going to hit the jackpot. And now here we are sitting at looking at Alex Bregman, and it took the reopening crack of the door, as Dana Brown put it, for there to even be the possibility seemingly yet again that, one, Bregman could return, and, two, that he could sniff the kind of money at the kind of years that he thinks he's supposed to be getting that no one else seems to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we won't know until he signs a contract, right? Because I'm not – look, he still might get more than 156 over six. I think that in the grand – like in the larger scale, if he signs a $90 million three-year deal, I still think he can make 156 over six. So I don't know if – I can't say that Boras has cost him yet. There's no way you could possibly say that. I'm also not convinced that there's not a bigger offer on the table out there for Bregman. I think that there could be a bigger offer of 156 for six, but it wouldn't be for a team that he wants to play for.
Mm-hmm.
That's like where my mind is wandering. Like maybe he doesn't want to play with the Angels, right? Like the Angels have spent money now. It'd be weird with Rendon and all of that, but What if the Angels have offered him $200 million for six, but he just doesn't want to play in L.A.? So he's trying to get the money closer to the biggest offer that he has. Or we've heard Toronto is like kind of like a dark horse contender, and Toronto is notorious for being the bridesmaid to these free agents. They're always finished second place for these free agents. What if the Blue Jays are giving him $180 million for six? That's $30 million a year, which is what his demand is. So I'm not a believer that he doesn't have a bigger contract than $156 million over six.
I'm totally with you on that. I think that, you know, he Instagrammed this morning something about, you know, loving the United States of America and only want to play here in America or work here in America.
Do you think that had to do with the D.C. thing, though?
I don't know if that was that or if it was the fact that the Toronto Blue Jays are one of the teams rumored to be in the mix and maybe he doesn't want to play in Canada.
That would be really out of touch if he did that today, I think.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right with everything else that has happened. But, you know, I don't know where this thing ends and how it ends. I'm not even sure that I want him back at that number. And I don't know, you know, I don't know that if that's something that, hey, we made this offer and that Boris assumes that if we can't find anything better, that it'll always be there. Or if there's a renegotiation because of the fact that he doesn't have a deal. And I'm totally with you. I just do not believe that, you know, Boston, we've heard, only wanted to go 3 years to maybe four at most. And they're supposedly in the mix. The Tigers totally scared off by the amount of money that Bregman wanted and the fact that he was trying to up it closer to $200 million. And they've already gotten shocked by the Javi Baez signing that went completely wrong for them. And they're a small market team. So those are the two other teams we hear that are the most competitive other than the Blue Jays for his services. And it doesn't seem like anything's close to the 6 and 156. So I don't know what they're thinking, but what I'm thinking is that he better damn well hope that that offer stays on the table with the Astros and there's a way that he can try and salvage this, whatever he feels like he has to, because now we're hearing, well, he doesn't want it to look like he took a pay cut. Bottom line is, regardless, if you don't sign with the Astros, you're going to take a pay cut in terms of what you were expecting and the AAV you were trying to get.
Yeah. I don't think we can determine if he's a loser or not until that contract is signed. And it also depends, like, on the motive. Like, what is he desiring to do? Is he going to the absolute top bidder? Or does he want to be close to the top bidder but also, like, a chance to win? So, I don't know. Like, I don't know. What would you define, like, losing, though? Like, if he gets under 156 for 6 years?
I think to start with, if he doesn't get the 6 years, and then from an AAV perspective and for the totality of the contract, you're right. He could if... And I think we both have question marks about whether he can sustain even what he did last year over the next 4, 5, 6 years so that another contract or a shorter contract, for say he's trying to do what he did last year for about 3 more years. After those 3 more years, older and with less confidence from a baseball perspective, the other teams looking at him going, I don't think he can do it much longer, and I definitely am not going to take the risk of paying him like Jose Abreu. I just think that if he ends up 6 years from now and he doesn't make 156 or more, granted, taking that if he walks away from the Astros deal, I think after 6 years we're going to look back, if I'm Alex Bregman, I look back and I say I should have taken the Astros deal just like Dallas Keuchel, because I don't think he's going to make 156 if he doesn't take what's on the table.
Yeah, I'm probably on the other side of that. I think that he'll make north of 156 at minimum. At minimum. I think he'll make 156 or more over the next 6 years, no matter the contract that he signs this offseason. So we can't know yet. The question that I have, let's play a guess the date on when Alex Bregman signs with a team, any team. Because, look, pitchers and catchers are reporting here pretty soon, like very yep. soon. There's going to be spring training games in February. So guess the date. When does Alex Bregman officially sign with any Major League Baseball team?
See, I know that Montgomery and Snell, they actually didn't even report with pitchers and catchers, and spring training was well underway or almost done by the time they signed. I think with a position player, they don't have to be there when pitchers and catchers report, but I believe that at some point they've got to get into spring training.
Yeah, it's only like a week later, though.
I think I was going to say Valentine's Day. I think by around February the 14th, Alex Bregman signs a contract.
Dang it, that was my answer. Because I was going to say that Bregman's a lover, not a fighter. And it's going to be symbolic to
Lame.
The big heart that he has.
Lame takes.
Blanker stole he stole my
March
glory
1st.
There.
He's not, he's
you
not
think
going.
March 1st?
Yeah, he's not going into February. March 1st.
You know,
hey, like you guys said, he's a position player. He's not a pitcher. There's no rush.
That's true.
We've seen Boris use
March
this playbook.
1st.
I mean, how many times?
I'm going to go. I'll go. Since Blanker's got February 14th, I'm gonna go February 28th. Little Friday news dump.
One day before mine.
Give me February.
Would you like
28th.
To play the Price is Right on this?
Well,
show,
if I was doing Price is Right, I would have went March 2nd. I would have
yeah.
went over.
Yeah, I would be in an advantageous position.
Going
in, if
I thought you were. I thought you were going to take February 15th. Actually,
I was going to take the 14th, and you took it.
Right, think, but if you go the 15th
yeah,
and you're under,
rules, yeah,
yeah that's where you would have done it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, but Brian kind of talked me into the whole March thing. Like, he's a veteran. He probably doesn't want to be at spring training, right? Like, he's got a wife and a kid.
You know he's gonna
two kids, maybe.
You know he's going to start slow anyway, so what's the rush?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he
his
I think
season
he kinda
starts
swayed
in June.
Me. He kind of swayed me, but I still want to go with February. A texter says if he's smart, he would sign that six-year deal that the Astros got on the table. What if he's getting 180 for six somewhere else, though? Like, that's the thing we don't know. Are we for sure that the six for 156 is still on the table? I feel that Dana Brown changes the offer after Paredes and Walker signings. Well, the report was that it was still on the table. But, you know, reports can always be false. Texter says Bregman will sign on Groundhog Day. Another texter, Bregman is not coming back. They would have figured it out by now. I think he's using the Astros to squeeze a few more dollars from another club. Yeah, I could see that, too. I could see that, too. It's very odd how much Espada was like, yeah, we're still talking to him. And then Dana Brown's like, yeah, you know, we're still in conversation. And then the whole, like, Boris, I owe him a call. Like, I do think that the Astros are in the mix. There's no doubt in my mind that the Astros are in the mix.
I actually think that when Dana came out as candidly and he did and said, I owe him a call, I think that was almost a message to the other general managers out there that, hey, by the way, there is no other – We are not the ones pursuing him, so that it can be very clear as everybody watches this thing unfold that they're not going to be played by Scott Boris in this deal.
Yeah, which is wise. Texter is 180 in Toronto, more than 156 in Texas with taxes. I don't know, man. I'm not an accountant. I'm a jabroni that talks on the radio.
You were a math major for one semester, so.
Not an accounting major, though.
Okay.
Not an accounting. I don't know. The state taxes are a little bit over my head. I hire a guy. I hire a CPA to do my taxes to handle all $25,000 that I have. People do overrate the state tax thing, though, because you do pay taxes on games that you play away from your home park. Like, so if you're going to play in New York – that game rate that you get, you owe taxes in the state of New York. So a lot of times people calculate the 100% salary as being based in Texas with no state tax, when you do have to account for the fact when they play out of state and they're playing in a state that does have state tax, they actually owe that state taxes.
Yeah, and you know the Astros obviously have to – now it got a little bit less since the A's are moving, but, I mean, they had two teams in the division in California where taxes are a lot higher, so that gap wasn't as significant as they would often be made out to be.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag math.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to – I always hated those taxes, but we obviously lived in it on a completely different landscape.
Different tax tier?
Pay scale. Yeah. Than what they're worried about, because I don't think the players and their accounting staff worries like we did when we saw our checks and we're like, good Lord, we got taxed every city we landed and how many days we were there, and
yeah.
Man, that was painful.
Yeah, it kind of goes under the radar sometimes. Astros should drop their offer for the 150 for six. I'm down. I think 156 is six too much. I was at 124 at the start of the offseason. People are like, oh, you're crazy. They'll never sign that. He might sign a 90 for three. 120 for four is probably better. It is better than the 90 for three that I was throwing out there. All
you
right.
think he'd give that to the Astros?
120 for four?
No, he would offer the Astros a shorter deal at 30.
I have no idea. Like, we've heard so many stories
so.
On this. Like, we heard a report he wants a long-term deal. We heard a report that he wants $30 million. I think he wants 180 for six. And my hunch is he has an offer from a team that he doesn't want to play for 186. It's just my guess. Just a total guess.
I just wondered, because he's got pride and because of the way this whole thing has played out, not looking like the way he wanted it to, would he say, yeah, there's another city out there making where I don't want to play, but they're offering me a shorter deal, but the AAV is what I want. I'll call the Astros and say, would you give me 90 for three or 120 for four? And I don't think Pride would let him do that.
Maybe not. I mean, but at the end of the day, you have to sign a deal. Like, at the end of the day, you have to do something. So it's a weird deal. It's a weird deal. Guess the date on when Bregman signed. 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, are you cool with Kaylee as the offensive coordinator? He interviews today, as does Bill Lazor, by the way. But are you cool with Kaylee? I'm kind of coming around on the idea. I'll tell you why next. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Something else that I'm always comfortable with is HR&P. Human resources and payroll. They are the best. If you're a business owner, get HR&P in your life, and your life will be better for it. It's Cougar owned by Mike Holly. Starts there. Go Cougs. Business owners, let HR&P help you, whether it's HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding, any of those areas, all of those areas, one of those areas, HR&P can help. No box with HR&P. You're not reading off a menu. You have a small job. You have a big job. You need a lot of help. You need a little help. Doesn't matter. HR&P is going to sit you down, completely customize a plan for what you and your business needs, and your business is going to be better for it. We were just talking about all those taxes. HR&P can help you there, too. They always are on top of the latest trends in any business element. You have a problem, you have an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, a lot off your plate, HR&P is going to find a way to help you and your business. They do it in a way that's unique to best technology in the business. They have the best service. You're going to love their technology. You're going to love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll never talk to a stranger, too, on the other side of the line. You'll be talking to someone who knows you, knows your business needs. You're going to fall in love with that. Give them a call right now, 281-880-6525. Let HR&P customize a plan for you. Let 2025 be the year you get back on track. 281-880-6525, or just visit them online, hrp.net. They got a great website. Look through that, scroll through that, and figure out how they can help you. hrp.net. Goodbye.
ESPN
97.5. 6525, or just visit them online, hrp.net. They got a great website. Look through that, scroll through that, and figure out how they can help you. hrp.net. Goodbye.
Yes, coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Just a pleasant farewell. Nothing wrong with that. It's good business.
Don't good say goodbye. For an HR company. Say see you in 3 minutes, or listen to us in 3 minutes.
It was goodbye for the HR&P. Goodbye for your business if you don't get HR&P in your life. Now that for a hard sell.
Okay.
There you go. All right. 713-780.
Fear mongering there on the end of that
one. It's a hard sell. Yeah, you got to have all sorts of tactics whenever you're a sales guy. Probably why I couldn't do sales. I couldn't do the whole hard sell. Your life's going to be awful if you don't buy my product. You know, that's tough.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Just make sure you say goodbye at the end.
Say goodbye. You got to be pleasant. Yeah, you got to be pleasant.
I've had some experience in sales, even in the CBA, and I'll tell you this. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not going to lie to people. I'm not going to try and, you know, pull the wool over their eyes to get a buck. And I don't know how some people on the sales staffs live with themselves, but boy, they try by any means necessary sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, most of the sales guys I know are very, very honest. Sales ladies, they're very, very honest. But you run into a few of them every now and then. They're like, dang, this guy's ruthless. Ruthless. Get out of my house. Get away from my door. I don't want you near me. Are you cool with Nick Kaylee? 713-780-ESPN. He's one of two candidates that will interview for the job today. Bill Lazor being the other. So the Texans with two internal options, right? Gerard Johnson, Bill Lazor now, and then they've Nick Kaylee will be the one of the externals as well, and the two guys they interviewed earlier in the week. How do you feel if it's Nick Kaylee, Blankers?
Kind of uneventful, like underwhelmed. I mean, we've had so many conversations that I'm really locked in and hoping that it's Chip. And I hope that Chip Kelly gets the job because he has experience not only as an OC, but he has experience as a head coach in two different places. He has experience in the NFL, you know, coaching and running a defense and a full team. And I think that means something. I think that the bigger thing to me that I've been harping on, and I have nothing personal against Gerard. I have no you know, personal bias against anybody except for the fact that we just went through Bobby Slowick's 2 years of never having experience calling plays before. And I think that led to some of the mishaps and some of the mistakes and the less than performances that we saw to the Texans offense. And I don't want to revisit that or maybe even take a half a step or more back while we take another guy that's never called plays and now kind of go through the bumps and the ups and the downs of another guy doing that. I need someone that comes in from day one and says, this is our offense. This is what we're going to do. This is how I want to do things. And then we can talk about terminology and, you know, altering playbook and things like that as we go.
Yeah. Here's let's play Nick Cayley, because I do have some pushback to that. It's not just you. It's like the general conversation when it comes to any offensive coordinator job. But here's Robert Mays from The Athletic talking about Nick Cayley. I found this on John Crumpler's Twitter. Really good Texans follow. But Robert Mays from The Athletic talking about how Nick Cayley would be his top offensive coordinator candidate in this year's cycle.
Nick is the number one person on my offensive coordinator list coming into this offseason, and it's for a lot of different reasons. I think that, one, the energy is insane. Like, when you leave a conversation with Nick, it's kind of like leaving a conversation with Sean McVay in what they're bringing to the discussion. And that's kind of why I think them landing together is interesting. Nick and Sean didn't really have, like, a previous connection when he went out to LA. Nick is a Patriots guy. Like, Nick Cayley was raised in the Patriots organization as their tight ends coach. So Nick went over to LA for the 23 season. And that was the first time he had really coached outside of the New England system. And so I think LA was good for him in his football education in a few different ways. Seeing a different way of doing it from the way that Belichick did it, I think, is big. I think seeing different types of leadership styles, coaching styles, is very important. But also offensively, the construction and the ideas behind the Rams offense are extremely different than the construction and the ideas behind the Patriots offense. And this is, you know, personnel and how you deploy it and the run game and what it looks like, all that. But even the way it's taught in LA in terms of progressions and how the quarterback sees the offense, how it's communicated to the quarterback, that's extremely different than what it was in New England. And so I think seeing the NFL game from two different sides and being able to kind of come out on the other side and say, okay, when it's my chance, how can I kind of combine all of this stuff to make the best version of the offense I want to run? I think having that background as a coordinator is important because it gives you flexibility and you can step outside of just a Xerox copy of whatever offensive system you came from. And I thought the other part of this, he was offered the Patriots offensive coordinator job last year and did not take it. The self-awareness in that choice to know, you know what, I like it here. I enjoy the energy here. This is good for me. Let me get one more year under my belt. That's a difficult decision to make when somebody is giving you a really significant promotion. And if you look at some of the other guys whose names have been thrown around, Jerod Johnson, Josh McCown, Jerod, based on his offensive coordinator interviews last year, I heard they went well. I heard he was somebody that was worth putting stock in. He's very young. He has not been around this very long. Cayley's 42. He's been in the league for a while. I think he is really set up to take the best possible run at this. So when I saw that name as the first one that was thrown out, I was like, there it is. Like, that is the guy I would bet on. I am not surprised that Aaron Glenn, who has been an assistant in the NFL for a very long time, had Nick Cayley at or near the top of his list.
Albert Breer also reported that Cayley had an offer nearly $3 million to be the offensive coordinator for the Patriots and turned it down. Hearing that, does it change your view at all on Cayley?
I mean, it intrigues me a bit, and I found what he was saying very interesting. And, yeah, I'd be open to hearing more. At the same time, I'm still up against my concerns about, yeah, he might have all this energy. Yeah, I do like the fact, and I think as we talked about it, the more I thought about it, I like a guy that isn't just hell-bent on a Shanahan system. I mean, you can run McVay, Shanahan, just be modern, be creative, be innovative, and kind of have your finger on the pulse of you know, the way games are called in today's NFL. I don't know, man. I really cringe at the fact that I don't want a guy that hasn't done it before.
Okay, I'll give you the pushback I have on that on the other side. 713-780-ESPN. Also, Jasper just texted in. I wish I had HR&P. Hindsight is 2020. I had my secretary doing payroll, and she didn't do her job, and now IRS is after me for $25,000. That stinks, Jasper. If you need a buck or two, ask Blankers. You can find them on Pac-Man Joel.
No, we got a commercial, too, when the IRS was knocking, and it's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
There you go. And you can get HRP in your life, 281-880-6525, or just visit them online, hrp.net.
Goodbye.
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 All right, I'll give you the pushback I have to the offensive coordinator post when we return. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. I assume you knew. You found the killer bees live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Key from L.A. Recently, Hoosier out of McVay and Shanahan been producing the best coaches. Clearly McVay. Yeah, you're right. It's McVay. XX Ron on Twitch. I want a guy with experience. I was really hoping DeMeco could just turn offense over to a guy and focus on defense. Slowick burned me on a first-timer. Nothing against these other guys. So, like, I understand the fear there because you hope that it's not Slowicky, right? You hope it's not first-time play call. Although Slowick was good in year one. Like, we kind of dismissed that. Slowick was – we were mostly happy with Slowick after a year. Other teams were interviewing him to be their head coach, or even a team interviewing to be the head coach this year. But, like, Sean McVay had to be a first-time play caller. Kyle Shanahan had to be a first-time play caller. I feel like we dismiss these first-time play callers that they can be very, very good. I would argue they have a chance to be just as good as a retread play caller. Maybe they're more volatile, but maybe you get more upside at the same time. Like, again, McVay and Shanahan had to call plays for the first time. So to me, it's more about getting the hire right. I don't really care who you hire. It just needs to be right. And then we reserve the right to criticize you if the hire stinks. And we'll also credit you if the hire is very, very good. And I think what people fall into, especially from like a fan base perspective, is that you're really looking for sizzle. Quite frankly, you're looking for a sexy name that makes you feel comfortable. Because whenever anybody throws out a Chip Kelly, it's, okay, well, I know his offense has been good. I know that even in the NFL when he was a head coach, despite not having the best resume, his offenses were clicking. Oh, he won the national championship at Ohio State as a play caller. But does that automatically make him better than a first-time OC? Does that make him better than Sean McVay whenever he was a first-time play caller in Washington? So from a fan base to make us feel safer, I think we're always looking for a comfortable name, a sexy name, a name that has a little bit of sizzle. And when we hear a name that could get the job that we've never heard of before or we have heard of, but it's like kind of a nothing burger, that like gives us fear that the guy's not going to be any good. How do we know? How do we know he's going to be any good as a play caller or not?
Here's my rebuttal to that would be, I don't know, and I didn't look up the first time that McVay and Shanahan were full board in control of the offense and called plays. And I didn't, and I don't know what state those teams were in. But
well,
I do
Shanahan's
know that
Shanahan's was in Houston under Kubiak.
Okay, they were pretty good, right? They were pretty good.
Yeah.
And Kubiak obviously is right there with him too. He's got his head coach kind of over his shoulder to be able to kind of guide him through, which you don't have with DeMeco. And I also think that, you know, where the team is, you know, from a status wise, record wise, you know, forecast and future wise, would alter my thinking on that as well, to say that, yeah, if you're just a team that's kind of pressing the restart button, or, you know, you're less than trying to build it back up, I'm fine with giving a guy his first chance to take the reins.
But what if he's best? What if he's the best guy, though? Like, what if DeMeco Ryans think that Nick Haley's the best offensive coordinator? Like, who cares that because you expect to be good that he's a first-time play caller if you think he's the best?
Yeah, I understand that, but I'm also thinking from the perspective of, in the process, if you don't know, you might have to take some lumps until you figure out that he is. You may feel like he is, but because of the fact the expectations are so much higher here than they would be in some of those situations that I was bringing up, that I think that it's tougher to say that that's what my biggest fear would be. That would be my apprehension. I don't want a guy that I'm going to have to worry about because of the fact that the team is so good that I don't know if he's going to be capable of guiding this team right away to where I need it to go.
But isn't that the interview process? Like, isn't that the purpose of interviewing the guy and having faith in the guy? Like, because what the coaches do and what we do as fans are very, very different. Because we as fans, we're looking at the process, well, this guy's resume is this. This guy, Chip Kelly's done this. He's guided a top five offense in the NFL. He's guided an offense that won a national championship in college football. He has a long history of being a really good play caller. That's his resume. And there's no doubt his resume as a play caller is far greater than Nick Haley's resume as a play caller. Because Nick Haley doesn't have a resume as a play caller. He's never done it, to your point. But you're not hiring a guy based on what they've done in the last 20 years. You're hiring a guy on who gives you the most confidence is going to be good in the next five. And we as fans, we think that the best resume is going to be the best hire. But coaches don't look at it that way. The coaches are predicting which of the two coaches gives them the best success over the next several years, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever the case is. So if D'Amico sits down and talks to both of these guys, and I think that the two interviews that he had with Chip Kelly's assistants earlier this week was to try to get an idea of what a Kelly staff would look like, and now he's meeting with Kaley today. Maybe it's between Chip Kelly and Nick Kaley. Who knows? But D'Amico's, whenever he's interviewing these guys, he's trying to determine who the best guy is for the job today and going forward, not who has the best resume. So if D'Amico sits there and tells us, well, he thinks Nick Kaley's the next Sean McVay, and he thinks Chip Kelly's solid, not bad, good, wouldn't you hire Kaley from a D'Amico point of view, from a D'Amico perspective?
I hear what you're saying, but no, the answer to me is not a slam dunk, yes, I'm going to hire Kaley, because I know that along the way, he might have that innovative mind. He might have that kind of that McVay gene, but he also hasn't done this before. And no matter what his innovative mind has, once you don't know until you're in the fire.
Well, you're making an educated decision on what is best.
But at the same time, in doing that, you also know that what factors in is I'm trying to win now. I have to win immediately. I can't have that, you know, him making some mistakes as he learns the ropes along the way might cost me a game or two here or there. That might be the difference between a division and a wild card, home field advantage or not, to where that's why I think it also comes down to roster and the state of the team where and expectations. If your expectations are, hey, we're on the way back up. We're trying to get a guy that takes our offense where it needs to go. That's one thing. But if you're a team that's a playoff team, that's a division winner that's trying to take it to the next level in terms of competing with the top two or three teams in your conference, now I'm a little hesitant and I'm a little concerned about the fact that as good of a mind as he might have, until he gets that experience, regardless of resume, that's where my concern comes from.
But aren't you hiring the best guy? Like, who you think the best guy is? Like, regardless of their
experience.
But that's
part of being the best guy. The best guy comes in and I don't have to worry about that.
I disagree. I don't think that's hiring the best guy. Like, if I'm hiring... I don't know. If I'm hiring somebody to, let's see, like a good analogy for this, like somebody that we spend money on. I don't want to say painter, like somebody who'd paint your house. Yeah, let's go with that. Like you're hiring somebody that's going to paint your house, right? And they give you their resume. I have 20 years. Like these are some of the houses I painted. I've painted these houses. Another guy, he does the same thing, but he's like I don't know, what do you call an understudy in painting? I have no idea.
An apprentice?
An apprentice, yeah, an apprentice. But he's an apprentice, but he has all these ideas that you love, and he has all these things that he's done in practice but not in real life that you absolutely love, and you think that he is the best guy for what you desire to be. Wouldn't you hire that guy?
No, because I think that everything has a value, right? And so value can be associated with the fact that, hey, for the long term, this guy is – he's going to settle in, and he is the kind of mind that I'm looking for. But in the short term, the value is that I don't have to worry about a guy that's never done this before making those kind of first-year OC mistakes. I've got a guy that's going to come in complete control. And then you have to weigh in terms of that added value of – how much different is a Chip Kelly offense or less potent or however you measure it or less prolific than an offense, you know, by somebody else and what the value is there? Because I think you have to put it all on the table and say you just can't do what you've done under Bobby Slowik in terms of kind of the things that been able to point out.
But you're just assuming the next guy that hires Bobby Slowik. What if the next guy that hires Sean
McVay? I'm not saying it's Bobby Slowik. I think he could be a much more innovative offensive mind. I think he could really know his stuff. But when you start being pressed about, you know, when you start doing the things that Bobby struggled with in terms of whether it's, you know, how do you adjust your offensive line or, you know, the right
sure, but he's not hiring
right
Bobby Slowik. Like, they fired Bobby Slowik because they don't want Bobby Slowik.
But I'm still saying, until you've been in the fire calling the plays and understand what that pressure's like and what, you know, the timing of it and the intensity of it and everything that goes with it, mistakes can happen. And I don't feel – at least I feel more at ease knowing that a guy that's been there and done that before, I don't have to worry about that from.
Yeah. See, I'm trying to find the highest upside because I for me, like, if you want to win it all, you need the sharpest at each position in your organization. Like, you want to have as close as you can to the best head coach. You want to have as close as you can to the best offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, all your position coaches. You want to have as close to the top of the league at quarterback, every single position that you have. Like, Sean McVay's first year as a play caller was 2014 with Washington. I don't know when Josh McDaniels was fired, but Josh McDaniels was fired, I'm sure, once, somewhere around that time. So if you had a team that needed an offensive coordinator and you were a playoff-caliber team, like, with your theory, you're hiring Josh McDaniels and I'm hiring Sean McVay. But I might miss. Maybe I'm hiring Bobby Slowik, too. But I'm willing to take the risk for the upside.
See, and I don't know if I can relate it to, like, Nick's coaching search. Like, if that's if you're doing this with a head coach, or you're doing it with an offensive coordinator. If you haven't made any mistakes prior to this, or the last guy that your predecessor wasn't kind of setting yourself up to at least have concerns about doing it again, then I'd be maybe more comfortable in taking. Like, if this was instead of Bobby Slowick, if DeMeco got the head coaching job, coming into this year, and he decided that this guy's the guy that's going to be my offensive coordinator, then I'd probably be a lot more open to everything that you're saying. But because I've already been scorned by what's happened with Slowick, because of the fact that we now know that the roster is set up to win now, and I'm a little less likely to be forgiving and understanding and work with a guy that's never done this before, that's where my concern comes from.
I think you're also minimizing the fact that he's been an offensive coach forever. Like, yes, he hasn't called plays, but he's not completely oblivious to the job. Like, he knows the job. Has not had the job, but knows the job. Like, I think he's ready for the job. He's been offered the offensive coordinator post of the Patriots, and the Jets have been interested as well. A lot of texters want to weigh in on this. 713-780-ESPN. Blankers, a lot of people. I think the majority, quite frankly, of the city. I think the majority of Texans fans want the old hand. They want the sure thing in Chip Kelly. If he is a sure thing, I'm more of get the guy that you think is the best for the job. I'll take the volatility of it. I'll take the guy that has the higher upside, even if he has a lower floor. And maybe that is Nick Caley. We don't know. But where do you stand on this? 713-780-ESPN. It is the Bees. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.